Blog Talk Radio.
I am dominating at my fingertips.
And you're listening to Hell in a Cell Radio.
The Hell in a Cell Talk Radio.
Hell in a Cell Radio.
Hell in a Cell Talk Radio.
Hell in a Cell Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Hell in a Cell Talk Radio, proudly part of the Hell in a Cell Talk Radio Network. This is the flagship, and I am, of course, the host, the Dean of Credibility, Double D, and you can find me at Folsom County. With me, as always, he is the above-average comedian, Dan the Man Colachico.
Hey, what's going on, everyone?
Follow me. No, go ahead, Dan.
Follow me on Twitter at DanLaw83.
And Obey Puck's show. A great interview you had this week. Why don't you tell people about it? Give it a plug. I loved it.
Thank you. Really? Oh, thanks, Dean.
Come on.
We interviewed Paul Baker, who is the New England regional correspondent of StadiumJersey.com. Basically, this website goes to stadiums and arenas around the country and really around the world, and give it a true rating. If you need to know about, so I haven't been here before, it's a visiting team. They will review everything down from the floor to the color to the bathroom to the kind of fans you're going to deal with at the place. And stateofdirty.com has been anywhere you can think of.
Around the world, 35 countries, right?
Something like 35 countries. They have a magazine you can subscribe to. Go to stadiumjersey.com to subscribe to the magazines. And any review of any stadium is free. Just go to the website.
That's true.
And you follow Paul Baker at PuckmanRI on Twitter.
You know
Paul's
what?
I'm sorry.
You know what? I'm glad you brought up the bathrooms. We'll get back to Paul's plug in just a second. But you brought up bathrooms. I'm going to announce it now. Starting next year, I'm going to start up a revolutionary concept.
Uh-huh.
Poopscoop.com.
Oh, that's right.
I'm going to review the bathrooms. Say you're out, you're at a Wawa or some other convenience store.
Or say you go
you
to
have to take a, you know. You want to know what type of facilities you're walking into before you. It's going to be bigger than Yelp, Dan.
Dude, I want to rate that.
You'll be the Virginia correspondent.
I will be the Virginia, sometimes New Jersey correspondent.
I will be the New Jersey correspondent. And our North Carolina correspondent would be, of course, the man joining me now. He is our wrestling and MMA analyst. He is Omega Squad Chris Green. How are you tonight, sir?
Oh, goody. I got a promotion.
Yes.
North Carolina correspondent. follow me on Twitter at Omega Squad for that.
That's right. Now, Dan, Paul Baker, you can find him at what? PuckmanRI.
PuckmanRI. And I'm going to, like I said, I've been in contact with Paul and Stadium Journey and come up with things. I'm going to come up with maybe a hockey roundtable kind of thing, a la Hell in a Cell. Maybe bi-monthly?
Hey, I heard the idea. I think it's a great idea.
It literally popped up in my head. He's got a great voice. He can talk a lot, and he knows a lot about hockey. Like Kelly does, and I'm just there to just talk, really. Kind of like now.
Hey, aren't we all just here
talk? Let me just say one thing. Like, if we start this website, the poop shoot thing, I guarantee that's how we will make it. All this work we've done on these podcasts, all this work that we've done on this website, we're going to be the ones known for the bathroom reviews.
Poop scoop.
Poop scoop. Buy that before somebody takes it.
I will probably in the early hours of the morning here.
Let me know if you need to do it half. I'll be there on the other one.
No, buying the domain won't cost much.
I just want to.
It's like $15 on GoDaddy.
I just want to see it.
Maybe I'll make it a .org.
Oh.
Yeah. Think about it. It's funny.
Poopshoot.org.
Omega, this weekend, of course, we had UFC 166. Just very briefly, your thoughts. Wait. Just wait for it.
Wait for it?
Just wait for it. I wasn't ready. Now I'm ready.
Break it down. Time.
So break down the event, just very briefly, for the people out there.
If you watched the fights on Saturday, you were witness to some of the greatest fights in UFC history and some of the most horrendous reffing in UFC history. But overall, you got your money's worth. I told everyone last week that it was worth your time. It was worth your time. It was worth your money.
What about the judging of the Bosch fight?
Horrendous. Horrible.
I had it a draw.
At best, it was a draw. To say that it was 30-26 Bosch is ludicrous. It's ridiculous. It's other big words for bad.
Horrendous,
yes. There's just no way that Bosch won all three rounds. No way. See, you know, I'm sure we'll get into it later, but I mean, CB Dalloway was faster, was scoring more shots, at least in the first round. I am okay if you give Bosch the third round, but he doesn't win all three.
Yeah.
No way.
Yeah. I thought.
And for two judges to see it that way is just ridiculous.
Actually, I mean, you could make it that it was still a 29-28, quite frankly, for Dalloway. So,
yeah.
Very odd judging indeed, and we'll get into that a little bit later on. I also have a clip of Mike Pierce and how he feels about Husamar Poirier. That's interesting. I think you'll enjoy that when we get to UFC. But our guest here tonight will be Ophidian, coming back if he somehow makes it through the time warp again.
I was going to say, sometimes the time warp is not exactly reliable. It's kind of like Amtrak.
It is. It is kind of like New Jersey Transit when you're waiting for a 10 o'clock bus and it comes at 10:20.
Oh, that's good. That's good.
But you realize the reason why, Dan. It was because...
The guy on the scooter?
Yes. It was the man on the scooter.
Tell me that's not true.
It's always true, Dan. One day there were three scooters on the 400. I can't even make that up.
Was it scooter they needed a scooter, or was a scooter put down the chicken wing scooter?
Two out of three were put down the chicken.
God, I hate that. Listen.
They got up off of their scooters just to insult the injury, Dan.
Once they got in the bus, hold on, I need to sit down. Listen, coming from a fat dude, seriously, just kill yourself.
Well, there you go. That stands a tip of the week.
Stop eating.
And also, we're going to be joined by Drew Blood. Now, Drew Blood is back in CZW. Of course, he was on some of the independents as well, but he's back in CZW, and he's embroiled in this feud with the Nation of Intoxication, and most importantly, I would say, Devin Moore. There's something going on there. We're going to find out what's going on. There's also something going on with himself, Ron Mathis, and Rory Mondo.
Uh-oh.
That's a little something else there, too. But we're going to get to that later on. Dan, you are the Raw. You've been upgraded as well.
Is this
congratulations.
Congratulations.
Is this an upgrade, or is it kind of like... Well,
you're the only one dumb enough to watch the show,
We don't want to review Impact, so I guess you can review Raw.
Well, how was Raw, of course?
It was okay.
I didn't see it. What?
It was okay.
Don't make me play Break It Down again, Dan.
Please do.
Oh, well, okay, Dan.
Break it down!
I'm dancing in my chair right now doing a thing. Was that dancing or was that just tapping feet and moving side to side?
No, he was an excellent dancer, Dan.
Oh, God, I don't understand that. The things we've talked about music-wise this week, I don't understand you. But anyway.
An excellent dancer.
We're going to move on. First of all, Triple H's music started the whole thing. I thought, oh, boy. And, you know, Stephanie and Triple H come out and do the diatribe and... they kiss and they do the whole, you know, this is what's going to happen for Hell in a Cell. And then the Big Show does, a la Steve Austin, appears via satellite on Titantron. And now you've seen the end, Dean, so you know why I say a la Steve Austin.
Well, yeah.
They have a incoherent argument. Doesn't really, you know, make any sense. And I didn't get it. The match was supposed, the opening match was Daniel Bryan versus Dean Ambrose, so I think this is why this happened. But he introduced Dean Ambrose, and Daniel Bryan came out instead. They had a great match. Those two in the ring.
Is it worth seeing?
Yeah.
Is it worth digging up on the internet?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I would.
Speaking of which, RF Video this week put out the best of Jon Moxley in CZW.
That might be one I actually grab.
$20 at RFVideo.com.
RFVideo.com, thank you. We'll be awaiting the money soon.
The residuals, yeah.
Yes, residuals from that three, never mind.
Non-existent residuals.
And then, I'm trying to move on.
Yes, please do.
CM Punk comes out and does it. Do you want me to, like, give it in depth or just kind of skip?
Well, what, the CM Punk, that interests me.
No. This is the one time I saw CM Punk, I was like, that was unnecessary because we have to fill 3 hours. He came out and said he's going to kill, you know, Punk. He's going to kill Ratbat just so he can kill, you know.
My question is it true that the match for Hell in a Cell, because I think they've done a poor job of promoting Hell in a Cell, is the match Ryback and Heyman versus Punk inside the cell?
I believe so, and that's how Punk was advertising it.
Yeah, that's my understanding.
Yeah, I didn't understand when it was first announced what the match would be, and then I don't know.
Well, thank God we are connected to the internet here at the Hell in a Cell studio.
Well, of course I could check, but I didn't want to cheat.
I'm checking right now. It is...
And it's going on your performance review.
Yes. It's a handicapped Hell in a Cell match. Interesting.
That's what I said.
Well, yeah, but I'm just... Now it's official.
And then you had Santino come out with Kali and Hornswoggle all dressed like Elvis.
Why? Were they in Vegas?
They were against the three-man band.
Were they in
Vegas?
Graceland? Were they somewhere
Memphis.
Were they in Memphis?
They were in Memphis.
Okay, well then
that makes sense.
Okay, very good.
The match I skipped only because of Randy Orton was Dolph Ziggler versus Randy Orton. Randy Orton went over. Bella Twins versus AJ and Tamina. Why are the Bella Twins in this business?
Because Mick Foley likes them.
I've been randomly hearing that that Brie Bella has actually been improving in the ring.
Yeah.
Can you verify that for me, Dan?
Yeah, Lacey Von Erich was a better wrestler when she left Impact. Oh, you guys wouldn't get that.
Yeah, you have to watch Impact.
Damn it.
Impact?
She was...
What?
Okay, here's the short version.
What's Impact?
You know the Von Erich name, Chris?
Yes, I'm aware of the Von Erichs.
Okay. This is a Von Erich, supposedly. She's Carrie's daughter. She was horrible. No ring presence, no ring talent as far... I'm saying I could out-wrestle Lacey Von Erich.
I've seen you bump, Dan, so I'm not sure how true that would be.
Before the bump part.
Okay, so chain wrestling,
and we don't bump that different.
Fair enough.
It's true, you, by the way. I told you. I wasn't prepared.
How do you get prepared? How do you get prepared,
though? It hurts my feeling. Because I had a wallet and all kinds of things in my pocket. I was afraid to hit my ass. Anywho, jerk. By the time she retired a year and a half later, she didn't pick up anything. And
wait, she retired?
Yeah, she left. She retired wrestling because she wasn't any good.
She's a disgrace to the Von Erich.
To quote Walter Matthau from JFK, means she wasn't any good.
Fair enough. Okay.
She was filming point-of-view wrestling videos for men.
Oh.
Yeah.
Voila.
Uh-huh. Anywho, I skipped a bunch of stuff. Is Big E all of a sudden face or something?
I hear they're trying to turn him that way.
Okay.
I don't know why.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, who's he facing? He is against Curtis Axel. That's on the kickoff show. So maybe a title win for him?
I think they want to put him up against Ryback at some point, is what I read.
Okay.
I would rather watch Big E than Ryback.
Neither.
Well.
So Cena, Alberta, well, we'll get into this later on.
Yeah, get into that later on. Then the Miz and Kofi Kingston fought the Wyatt family. I'm officially over the Wyatts.
I'm glad you came to the right side, Dan. The right side of...
It's like, maybe it's my ADD.
What, that ring entrance just takes too long for you?
Yeah, I'm done. Tons of Unk versus the Real Americans. I think I skipped a match or two. I think I actually skipped. There was a tag team between Big E and CM Punk versus Axel and Ryback. There was an actual match.
So 3 hours, what's your overall impression of all that took place? Was it a good lead-in show to Hell in a Cell?
No.
There
was a moment between... there is a moment at the end where Triple H said some things about a couple of wrestlers that have pissed a lot of people off for real backstage as well.
Well, the Rob Van Dam thing or whatever?
The Rob Van Dam, Chris Jericho, who did he mention?
Well, that could be Jericho working it, though.
Jericho.
Not Jericho.
Jericho wouldn't do such a thing.
That's very true. I mean...
I've heard both sides of that argument.
It seemed...
Well,
I've read, but yeah.
I read out loud, so
no, no,
I heard
Triple
it.
H said to me yesterday, we met after a party. He said, you know, I don't know what Chris Jericho's thinking, talking to me like that. And I said, that's very interesting, Triple H. Would you like a beer?
Did he take you up on the offer of a beer?
He did. And never mind. Never mind.
Fair enough. Go,
yeah,
go
trust
on.
Me. I'll tell you later. Anyway, at the end of that, perfect. Thank you. Thank you, Lord, for good timing. You know, the Big Show did that a la, very poorly, in my opinion. Steve Austin drove a tractor trailer cab into the ring, into the arena, and told Orton to turn around. Orton got the kick by Britt Daniel Bryan. Two and a half out of five. Stars, 2.5 out of ring, 2.5 ring bells out of five.
Well, what? Everybody uses stars. So why don't we use something else?
I said ring bells,
not ring bells.
Sable thongs.
What level of hell was it on, Dan?
10th.
10th level of hell. Fair enough. Is there a 10th level of hell?
The mayor of New York once talked to Theo LaGuardia, and he'd been dead for 37 years. Ghostbusters reference, yes.
Could you make that somehow mean something?
It happened in the movie, so it must be true. 10th level of hell. While New York got sucked in the 10th level of hell. This is going to be on the best of Dan Lawton cut.
It probably will be.
Damn it.
The best of volume 2.
I had it.
I at least got the reference, so.
Thank you. Okay, I feel better. But you know where I was going with it?
Yes, I knew where you were going with it.
Once or twice, the 10th level of hell is believed to exist. And I think there's pretty... How many are there in Dante's Inferno?
I believe there's only 7.
8?
There's seven or eight.
I don't know. I think it's 7. I may be wrong.
Why
I've been wrong before.
Why does our Moose Knuckle friend Justin have anything against me? So he sends little shots at me. Is it because I have more hair than him? Is that what it is?
Well, he shaves his head.
I've seen that you're starting to grow back in. Phil Collins has got nothing on him.
Yeah, it's
millions of dollars.
Hey, is there any other podcast going on tonight?
Dan. Anyway,
No, all right, so if you want to do serious level of hell, we're going to say Dante's Inferno has 7. I would put it in...
Well, is that the consensus? Is there 7 levels of hell?
You want me to look it up?
Someone look it up right now.
To the internet!
To the computer! Why isn't anybody tweeting about that? We're going to talk about how much I suck. Why does it tell me, somebody tell me how many levels of hell there is in Dante's Inferno? No, you don't know. I bet you it was on PlayStation 4, you didn't know. Can you want to stretch this out for me?
Nine circles.
Nine circles, yes. I was getting to that.
Nine circles of hell.
The nine circles of hell.
We are obviously the most well-read podcasters in creation.
I read it once 10 years ago in school, dude. 10 years ago.
I don't blame you. I'm not blaming you, man.
Hey, did you know Dante was rescued by the Roman poet Virgil? He was once the manager of the NWO.
Not that Virgil.
Yeah. Big, huge black dude in a black shirt. Rescued.
Dan.
What?
Stop it. Have you seen the various internet memes, Virgil?
Yes.
Alone.
At the table?
Yes.
I'd be the jackass standing there going, come on.
You know, I did bump into Virgil at WrestleCon. In
did
the bathroom.
You?
Yeah,
oh,
in the
yeah?
bathroom. Yeah, I told you this story.
We have so many, we run into so many people.
He was
crazy.
He was complaining about the facilities there at WrestleCon.
Did you tell him it was North Jersey?
I'm sure he knew. Good old Virgil.
You've been there before, Vince, Shane, I mean Virgil.
What is his real name?
Chris, you're faster internet than me.
Oh, God, here we go.
What is his real name? That's the question.
Isn't it like Virgil Jones III or something?
Mike Jones.
Damn it! That's right, he went by Mike Jones towards the end of WCW.
Really?
Yes, he did at one point.
Tell me more, Dan.
Did you turn the music off?
I like the music, yeah.
Okay. At one point, he was Vincent, and then he was Shane, and then he was Curly Bill.
Curly Bill.
It was Curly Bill because he was trying to hop on Kurt Hennig's coattail. I can't talk with that. I really can't. He was under
life,
the...
Life is hard, Dan. Sometimes
it is hard.
To go over these obstacles.
I'm going to make this through. I'm gonna fight this through.
Do it.
He was
you got 20 seconds.
He was right under the coattails of Kurt Hennig and the West Texas Rednecks, so he called himself Curly Bill. And then he was managing Ernest Cat Miller, who called himself Mr. Jones.
10 seconds to spare, Dan. I'm proud of you.
Mrs. Jones, too. Hold on, ready?
Proud of you, Dan.
This is the best show I've ever done.
Quality entertainment, I tell you.
Is anything grinding your ears this week, Dan? Or should I ask?
You probably shouldn't ask.
Fair enough.
Trust me. I mean, unless you want to burn some bridges this week.
I'm not in the mood to burn any bridges.
You let me know when, and I will come back to that.
But on that note, I'm going to play the Mystery Men, and of course, their hot single, Blood Will Flow. See, you thought I was going to say keep my heat on, didn't you?
No. I knew you were going to go another direction.
Yeah, see, I did.
Don't they have an entire new album?
They do have an entire new album. You can find it at Lucha Rock. It's the Mystery Men, and here is one of the songs off that very album, Blood Will Flow by the Mystery Men. We'll be right back.
the bottom of your toes. Might even turn on your elbow. Knock your head off your down.
Here we go.
Music in the rock will flow. From the top of your head to the bottom of your toes. Oh, might even turn on your elbow. Knock your head up and down.
Here we go.
Ride hard, fly low. Don't ever fall. Get the block will flow. From the top of your head to the bottom of your toes. Might even turn on your elbows. Nod your head up and down.
Here we go.
Stand tall. Ride hard. Fly low. Don't ever fall.
The Mystery Men with the Blood Will Flow on Hell in a Cell Talk Radio. And right now, it's time. It's time.
To myself.
From the Toyota Center in Houston, Texas, UFC 166, a very historic night for UFC, took place. Of course, it was headlined by Junior Dos Santos taking on Cain Velasquez for that coveted heavyweight title. And we're not going to start there, are we?
Why would we start there?
Why indeed would we start there? Let me just tell you, I think we should start out with what started. Did you see anything, first of all, on the preliminary card, the Facebook or YouTube preliminary card there?
I think there's a bunch of stuff to talk about on the prelims, honestly. You know, we talked about the judging earlier with Tim Bosch and CB Dalloway. I think the judging was also horrendous in the Sarah Kaufman-Jessica Eye fight.
Well, it certainly was.
I mean, that was ridiculous. The fight was good. Both women put on a really good fight, really strong outing for both of those girls. Jessica Eye coming in, moving up in weight to 135, facing a former 135-pound champion in Sarah Kaufman, who's a great striker. Acquitted herself very well in the first round and managed to probably take that round, at least on my scorecard. Kaufman came back in the second round and started pressing Eye and started landing some shots and really started to overpower her. The second round was a close round. Third round was clearly Kaufman's. Kaufman was landing far more strikes, the harder punches, and clearly won that round. So if you're a normal person, a normal judge, you say, okay, well, first round is Eye's, third round is Kaufman's, and then it depends on where you land on the second round. And that would be fine, except for the judges split way down, went all over the place. One judge gave the second and third rounds to Kaufman. One gave, like, the first and second. I mean, basically how it worked out was one gave the fight to Eye on a normal distribution. First and second rounds to Eye, third round to Kaufman. The other judge gave first round to Eye, second and third rounds to Kaufman. The other judge gave the first round and the third round to Jessica Eye. I cannot figure that out for the life of me.
Well, he was the same one who voted all three rounds for Bosch.
Well, but he was just one of two in that case. But it was just utterly ridiculous. How do you score it that way? And I really think Kaufman got robbed. I really do feel that way. I think Kaufman won the second round. But, I mean, if they had judged that the second round went to Eye, I would have felt okay about it because it was a closer round. But, Kaufman, in her UFC debut, I think I was disappointed. I'm a fan of Kaufman's. I think that she is a great striker, always comes to battle, just loves to fight, always smiling, even when getting punched in the face. And I think she got robbed. But, you know, Jessica Eye is a good fighter, took a fight moving up in weight and really acquitted herself very well against the former champion.
Do you think Kaufman loses anything? I know the new rankings came out and she did slip to number 5, but do you think she really loses anything in the site? Because UFC really doesn't go by that when they make their fights anyway, the official rankings for UFC.
No, I don't think so. I don't think she really does. I think... She's always a name. She's a top 5 fighter. She's gonna just kind of stuck on the outside looking in here because you're looking at the rankings. You're saying, well, I got, you know, especially in the bantamweight division, you still got Miesha Tate up there who's gonna fight in December. You got Kat Zingano waiting in the wings. She's kind of on the outs here. She's gonna have to pick up a win, obviously, to advance. But I mean, I think she's always. I don't think she lost a whole lot in the grand scheme of things, dropping from 2 to 5. I really don't think it's a big deal.
Now, another fight I do want to bring up. Of course, we didn't talk about KJ Nunes and Satoropoulos because there's not too much to talk about.
No, there was really nothing to talk about there. It was a kind of a lackluster effort from both guys. I'll be surprised if Satoropoulos stays around after losing to Nunes. Even in victory, Nunes didn't look that great. He's got some striking, but he's always been talked up. A few years ago, he was talked up for his boxing skills. It didn't really show in that fight, and you know, it's someone with his pedigree should be really knocking guys out left and right. He's not doing that. I think he runs up against a more talented fighter, a fighter with more momentum, he's going to get laid out and probably out of the UFC.
Well, speaking of a guy who did lay someone out on a stretcher.
Yeah.
My goodness. Magoff, is that his name?
Yeah.
Magoff? And, well, Whataburger?
Yeah, T.J. Whataburger.
My goodness. He was first round, 3 minutes in, and he's taken out on a stretcher. And the reffing in that, some say he was a little too concerned with other things, did not stop the fight in time.
Yeah, I think he was late. He was the ref was definitely late getting in there. Whataburger took too much damage. I'm not sure. I think he was just out of position. I think, quite frankly, he was backing up and then had to come back and try to push Magoff off him. It's unfortunate. I think Whataburger took too much damage, but I think
everything came back fine.
Everything came back fine. So you know, we're all grateful for that. But yeah, sometimes it happens. It on a card full of reffing and judging mistakes, it's probably one of the lesser ones in my view. I mean, it's still serious. I mean, refs need to get there on time for the safety of the fighters. But you know, things happen sometimes.
And it was the same ref later on that allowed a little bit too much damage to Sean Jordan as Gonzaga got a few good licks in after the knockout.
That one was a little bit too late. That one was a little bit less of an excuse in my view.
Same
guy, though. I mean, you know, if he does it twice on a card, yeah, absolutely. He needs to be looked at. Now, whether or not the commission is going to do anything to punish or sanction this ref, I don't know. I certainly hope he goes, at least get some continuing education or something, because yeah. That's you can't be late on two fights in the same card, frankly.
Yeah, that's one fight that did. Dan, you had
I was going to ask, can you, for the layman out there again, explain? I'm assuming you mean somebody was hurt and he didn't get in there fast enough to stop what was going on.
Yeah, because you know, if you look at MMA fighters are taught to fight until the ref pulls the guy off,
no matter what.
Yeah, I mean, because we've seen instances where guys have like knocked the guy down and jumped on him, laid on one or two punches, thinks the ref's gonna get up, gonna stop the fight, and he doesn't stop the fight. I forget which one is pretty famous. The guy got right up, jumped on the cage like he won the fight. I think Cyborg did that one of her fights too.
Yeah.
You
not cool.
Yeah. At the same time,
I didn't
even
think of it like that. I was thinking of the safety standpoint. I didn't even think of a the fight's not over yet, pal.
Yeah. But I mean they're taught to keep fighting until the referee pulls them off. Now some fighters, especially some of the veteran fighters are smart enough to know when a guy's truly out and minimize the damage, but sometimes a guy gets in it and just starts hammer fisting a guy in the face until the ref knocks him off or pulls him off.
Jeez.
And that's where the ref has to step in and really stop the fight as soon as possible so the guy doesn't take as much damage.
Yeah. Jeez. So that happened more than once on this one event.
Yeah. By the same ref.
Is it something that happens at every event, or is that a really rare thing?
It happens at times.
It's not uncommon.
Okay.
There's usually one or two fights on a card where you might, especially if there's a brutal knockout, where you'll somebody will complain that the fight was either stopped early or stopped late.
Yeah, that's
you know,
true.
There's no real way around it because reffing is such a subjective thing, and these guys. I mean, this is a thankless job. We had Bill Buchwalter on there on a few weeks ago, right?
Yeah.
I mean, he talked about how he waits until. Gives the fighters every last chance to defend themselves. It's a judgment call, and you have to make the decision in a split second whether to stop the fight or let it go on. And sometimes you know you end up on the wrong side of popular opinion.
Yeah,
but you know we're sitting here behind a microphone on the internet. These guys are actually in the cage.
Yeah,
so
I see what you mean. All right, that was all I was asking. I'm with you guys.
All right, and then moving right along, we kind of jumped to the main card there, but I do want to go back to the preliminaries because Hector Lombard, this was the Hector Lombard everybody was talking about. He knocked Nate Marquardt out of the UFC.
First you will see him on World Series of Fighting.
former UFC contender, Nate Marquardt.
Yeah, he looked great. He looked strong. He looked fast. He destroyed Nate Marquardt in this fight. You know, this is a guy who he's muscled up, even at this weight class. He looked good. He looked really strong. He's got some powerful, powerful punches. You know, just that uppercut was devastating. And, you know, Marquardt didn't have much of a chance after that. It was academic. The guy, again, like you said, this is the Hector Lombard everybody talked about. This is the Hector Lombard that signed the expensive contract. So at this weight class, if he can continue to make the weight cut, I think he's going to be a devastating fighter. He's going to be in the top 10. He is a one-man wrecking crew.
Yes, definitely. Speaking of another, do you want to talk about Bosch and Dalloway anymore, or did we pretty much cover
it? No, I think we've covered that one.
We didn't talk about the eye pokes, but are you worried about the gloves? Everybody's talking about the gloves.
it is what it is in MMA. I mean, I think they need to take more points away quicker. That's what I think they need to do. That's just my opinion. You know, I've heard, you know, we always hear Joe Rogan talk about, can they make changes to the gloves to make it less? Well, that's going to, if you do that, then you're going to inhibit grappling.
True.
I don't think anybody wants to do that, really. So other than training fighters to keep their hands closed, I think the only thing way to do that is start taking points away. I think if you poke a guy in the eye, it's
warning
it should be
a point.
I think the warnings have gone on long enough. I think it's time that you need to think about seriously just taking a point away right off.
Wow. That's wow. So what about the nut shots? Is that still a warning or?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's you know, and these are just me talking. I don't know. The nut shots, I don't seem to – they hurt. Don't get me wrong, but, you know, you can damage the eye so seriously.
True.
With an eye poke. At least with the groin shots, you at least have the cup, you know.
Yeah, yeah. I heard Bosch was getting checked out by an ear, nose, and throat specialist. He has to get checked out a little further. His first results came back fine, but before he can start training again, he has another 2-week follow-up. So one of those eye pokes was really devastating. Caused a cut right in the eye, it looked like. Not in the eye, but above it, like the eyelid. So, yeah, I mean, to your point, I mean, we've seen Bisping, we've seen Belcher have problems with the eyes. Definitely, I thought it riled him up, though.
Oh, absolutely! I mean, he actually came back that third round and probably took that round. But I mean, I don't see what else we can do. I mean, if you can't do anything about the gloves, the warnings don't seem to be working. Then you need to start taking points away, and guys will learn to keep their fists closed. Just I don't know. That's my opinion, but
fair point. I agree with
that's what grinds my gears.
Yeah, definitely that. Right. Now, yeah, that's his that's his spot. Now, John Dodson, he looked amazing as well, knocking out Montague, and this was the first pay-per-view fight, round one, 4:13 in. What do you got to say?
He looked great. He looked absolutely great. You know, you could completely tell that he had the speed advantage on Daryl Montague. He had the power advantage on Montague. He was just slipping punches and landing pretty much at will. That left hand that puts Montague down was devastating. And, you know, you rarely see a guy just do the flare flop face down in the middle of an MMA fight. It was a pretty stark visual. Dodson is definitely still in that running for that flyweight title. He's going to get another chance. He keeps doing that. They're not going to be able to deny him.
Well, that was my next question. I mean, what fight do you give Dodson next?
You know, I don't know. I mean, there's.
I mean, let's be honest. Montague was pretty outclassed there.
Yeah, you know, he's a guy that wasn't even he's making his debut in the UFC, and he has to face a guy like Dodson. That's rough. That's a rough task for anybody coming in. I think I don't know. I think Benavidez has the next shot at Johnson. I'm maybe John Moraga. I don't know. I mean, because he's beat a lot of those guys too. I'm just trying to look at his record here, but I mean, he's beat a lot of the top guys. So I mean, he's in my opinion, he's the number one contender in my view. I think even more than Benavidez, he's beat Moraga already. So who knows at this point? He's beat Formiga. I'm just looking through the rankings here. I mean, John Lineker, maybe. I don't. Does he beat him too?
Give him something.
Yeah, he definitely needs a top 10 opponent. Absolutely. If you're not going to give him a title shot, then he needs a opponent, a caliber opponent.
The next one, and I have a question about this as well. Gabriel Gonzaga coming back with the porn stash. He looked amazing though, knocking out Sean Jordan. Now, frankly, I didn't give Jordan much of a chance anyway. But he knocked him out round one, a minute 33 in. So that he spent his last two trips to the octagon, a minute 40 seconds in there?
Yeah.
Knocking people out?
Less than 2 minutes. And this is a guy who's known for his submission skills.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of crazy, honestly. I really don't know what to make of Gonzaga. I mentioned on Twitter the other day, it's just I don't know how to handle a resurgent Gabriel Gonzaga.
I mean, we're talking a guy, what was it, UFC 75, UFC 80, something like that. He knocked out Krokop in the main event.
Yeah,
he had the title shot.
UFC 70.
70. So there you go.
But then he lost to Randy Couture, and then he lost to Fabricio Vadum. Had a rough go of it, lost to Shane Carwin, lost to Junior Dos Santos pretty badly.
Mm-hmm.
He
wasn't around for a little while,
and he eventually got, he lost to Brendan Schaub of all people, and then he was out of the UFC for a while, for a couple years. And
the resurgence is here,
and then he's come back, and now he's knocking guys out.
What do you do with him? You don't give him Roy Nelson. Roy Nelson, I think, is out of the top 10 now. He has to be.
He's barely hanging on in the UFC rankings. He is number 10.
Gonzaga has to be at least what would you say, a top 5 guy at this point?
No.
Top 5 in the UFC?
No.
Who do
Not
you
yet.
Have? Who do
cool.
you have?
He's close to top 10. He's close to top 10 right now.
Who do you have above him? I mean, who do you have below him then?
I mean, I think who do I have below Gonzaga?
Well, above. Above.
Above, I have everybody. I mean, I think you could make a case for Roy Nelson might be, maybe not in the top 10, and maybe Gonzaga is, but, Josh Barnett, Travis Brown.
Okay, Barnett.
Fabricio Verdum, Daniel
Cormier.
Well, do
you give him Brown next fight then? Because Brown's kind of unproven.
Well, he already lost to Travis Brown two fights ago. So you're not going to probably get him in that fight again.
Who's the other guy? The other big lumpy guy?
The big lumpy guy?
Yeah. Travis Brown, I get Brown and the other guy confused.
You're talking about Ben Rothwell?
Yes. Big yeah. Ben Rothwell.
Maybe Rothwell.
Give him Rothwell.
Well, he already had Rothwell. He already beat Rothwell. He beat Rothwell with this.
Well, give him Barnett. I don't care.
Maybe Barnett. I don't see. I mean, maybe Stipe Miocic.
Perhaps. I think that's what everybody's saying.
That's what everybody's saying, and I think that's not a bad fight. That's to really see where Gonzaga is right now. Because, I mean, let's face it, less than 2 minutes in last two fights coming off the loss. Yeah, it says he's got KO power. I just don't know what it means. He beat Dave Herman and Sean Jordan.
The hell with it. Give him Kane.
Give him Kane.
I don't care.
Well, Kane doesn't have much in the way of challengers left.
That's what I'm saying.
He's got Verdum next.
What about Gonzaga and Bigfoot? I know you don't care for Bigfoot.
I don't care for Bigfoot, but I wouldn't mind. That wouldn't be bad.
It matches him up well, gives him, some proven type of thing there.
And he hasn't fought him, so that's good.
Yeah, see, that's the difficult thing there. You're trying to find guys that they didn't fight, so.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so I say Gonzaga, give him Miosic, like you said.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. You know, if it's either it's a statement win for either guy. You know, if Miocic beats Gonzaga, he beats a
former contender.
He beats someone who's on the roll. If it's Gonzaga, he cements himself in the top ten.
And with three wins in a row,
then you start talking about, well, maybe. But then maybe then you start talking about me throwing him up against Barnett or Silva.
I got you. I jump too far ahead sometimes.
Yeah. You know, he's at least three fights away from a title shot.
When is Holly Holm coming to the UFC? Put her in this one. <Yeah. laughs> I'm kidding.
Why not?
We talked about that last
time. Why not?
But the next fight, I have a little bit of highlights here from Fox Sports 1, so here we go.
Lightweights Gilbert Melendez and Diego Sanchez. This, folks, was absolutely incredible. They painted the canvas red in an amazing scrap. Kenny, take us through it.
Well, Sanchez started off very, very well. Took the back of Melendez right off the bat, but Melendez got out of that position and just outstruck Diego Sanchez for the rest of the fight. But it was Diego Sanchez's persistence and aggression of going for that made this an unbelievable fight.
Well, after two rounds, Diego's corner tried motivating him. Let's take a listen in our Sounds of the Octagon.
Don't let the bottle take that bottle out of your daughter's mouth, baby. You got to get it. You got to win this.
All right, last round right here.
You know, I think before this event, everyone was saying this was going to be a fight of the night. I don't think we knew that this could potentially be the fight of the century. This was unbelievable. And I am not exaggerating. This could very well be just unbelievable display of heart by Diego Sanchez and unbelievable display of striking skills from Gilbert Melendez.
Well, we literally couldn't cut a highlight long enough for this barn burner. You're going to have to order the pay-per-view to see the whole fight. Gilbert Melendez getting his first UFC win, his UFC record now 1-1. He is 8-1 in his last 9. Diego Sanchez 3-4 in his last 7.
Okay, so Omega, your thoughts on this amazing fight. Melendez had the first two rounds, and he still went out there in the third round to just put the exclamation point on this fight.
I think Dana White said it in the post-fight press conference that these were two Mexican warriors just going to absolute war. You know, the interesting thing about this fight wasn't that a competitive a fight? There was no question that Gilbert Melendez was the better fighter, but Diego Sanchez just refused to go away.
The fight was stopped twice for doctor stoppages. The doctor came over, checked out the cut above his eye. Stopped twice. He said he could see everything was fine. He wanted to continue. And did he ever?
Oh, Jesus. Yes, he did. Diego Sanchez is some sort of freakish cyborg from the future, I'm convinced of. Because he was just taking shot after shot after shot after shot. And he still came back for more. And he was throwing stuff. And throwing with intentions. You know, he started tired towards the end of round three. But by that time, he had thrown so many punches. And he was just a bloody mess.
He almost won.
He almost won. That's the one piece that surprised me. And I think Diego made the mistake when he got the knockdown.
Going for the submission, right?
Going for the submission rather than just pounding Melendez out. I think if he had gone and tried to pound Melendez out, he might have got the upset. But instead he went for that rear naked choke, and then that allowed Melendez to recover and escape. I think that was a mistake, but... I mean, it's hard to argue with the overall fight. It was, you know, one of those fights for the ages. It's one of those fights that you look back on and say, "Holy crap, that was one of the best fights ever." And again, it wasn't competitive. Melendez was winning that fight by leaps and bounds.
Well, but Sanchez did come back in that third round. He won it. On my card and two of the judges.
Yeah, I mean, I can see you giving him that round, but he needed a knockout, frankly. I mean, but in rounds one and two, Melendez was just popping Diego whenever he had the chance.
The pinpoint strike that opened up his eye
was ridiculous, and even towards the end, even towards the end, I think it wasn't so much that Diego had like the skill, but he was just, you know, full Terminator mode, just kept wading in, and eventually something was going to land. But even he was winging punches, but Melendez was tagging him. Every time he would swing one and miss, Melendez would throw two and land both of them.
Yeah.
Even in the third. I mean, it wasn't on a point basis, it wasn't that competitive, but Sanchez eventually got that uppercut. And, you know, a tired Melendez having to keep up with that pace, you know, you get hit with an uppercut, you might go down. That's fine.
I'm going to see three fights from now. I want Diego Sanchez to go on some type of winning streak, get ranked again, and I'm going to see this fight again. I'm going to see it five rounds.
Yeah, here's the thing, and I've seen people talk about this. You know, should the fight have been stopped? They looked, check that cut, what, twice, three
twice.
Times?
It was twice. They probably checked it in between the...
They checked it in between the rounds, but they certainly stopped the fight twice.
Yeah.
To check the cut. You know, you could maybe let it go in the second round. By the third round, that fight probably should have been stopped. And Sanchez took a ton of punishment through that fight. Sometimes you have to stop the fight for the safety of his own fighters. I you know, even if we would have lost that great fight, I don't know that I would necessarily blame someone for stopping it with the amount of punishment Sanchez took.
Yeah, I can I can agree with that.
It's that fine line we always talk about.
Is there anything else you wanted to say about this tremendous fight?
I go out and watch it.
That's yeah. Find it somehow and watch that fight. If you watch it and then you still don't like UFC, you'll never like UFC or MMA or the sport of combative sports whatsoever.
Yeah, I mean, and that's fine. But if you don't like that fight, then this is not the sport for you.
Exactly. Yeah. Now, Daniel Cormier in his last fight as a heavyweight, and Roy Nelson in his last fight as a heavyweight, apparently, they went to a decision, and it looked like Cormier is, I don't know, I really don't like the guy. He's a little too cocky, I think. I don't like him, but he can really muscle around guys.
It's that Olympic wrestling pedigree. He's got the leverage. He's got the strength. He's got the cardio to beat a lot of guys, beat guys that are bigger than him. And he proved it once again with Roy Nelson. Nelson just couldn't get anything going. For a guy the size of Cormier, even at 225, he had great speed for a big guy. And his wrestling gives him the technique to have the leverage and be able to just to stuff Nelson. Nelson couldn't land anything on Cormier because Cormier was too fast. Cormier would just hop in, land a jab or two, and then hop out, not give Nelson a chance to wing that punch.
He came close a few times, but never really was Cormier in danger.
No. He never really threatened Cormier at any point.
Nelson looked bad.
Yeah, he did. I mean, he looked like... he didn't look like a top 10 fighter.
Oh, definitely not.
In that fight. He looked in the better shape than we've seen him in a long time. But he just was outclassed in this fight. We had talked about, you know, maybe get him to the ground and maybe submit him, but, you know, that wasn't going to happen.
No, not at all. I mean,
takedowns were not going to happen against Cormier.
Cormier definitely did prove one thing, that his wrestling is on such a world-class scale.
Yeah, so you got to wonder, going down to 205 and being the bigger guy for once, that's going to be an interesting dynamic, because he doesn't need this. He doesn't need all the strength he has, and he's going to be pushing guys around quite easily in 205.
Oh, at 205, I'm not sure if he's on the scale of John Jones yet, because John Jones is so lanky and elusive once he gets to the ground. So
John Jones is a puzzle that Cormier has not encountered yet.
Guys
with the length of Gustafson and Cormier who can use it and can strike and have decent wrestling of their own. He hasn't fought them yet. Now he's gonna outclass them on the wrestling. That's not a question. But is that going to be enough when you got guys that can punch you without you grabbing hold of them?
Yeah,
that's the interesting thing with Cormier.
I look forward to it. One comment I do want to make, of course, Cormier is leaving the heavyweight division to go down to light heavyweight because he doesn't want to fight his friend, Cain. Velasquez, of course, the heavyweight champion of the world. Now, to me, isn't that why you're here? I mean, granted, you can change division and that sort of thing, but why move to a different division when you're obviously a very good heavyweight on your own right?
Well, you know, you wonder that sometimes. We've heard about at 170 with Rory McDonald not being willing to fight GSP. You got to wonder what are you in this for other than to be a champion? You know, fortunately for Cormier, he has the option of going to 205, and that's fine. If you have the option, can make another weight class and be competitive, go for it. I don't have a problem with that. If you want to not fight your friend in his weight class, and if he's the champion, I understand that. But if you're at your natural weight class and you can't really move one way or another and be competitive, then I think you got to step up and fight your friends. We've seen friends fight before in the octagon.
Yeah, Chuck Liddell and Tito Ortiz.
This is the job. This is a sport. Friends. You're on in the cage. You fight. At the end, you hug. You make up. Go out for a beer. I mean, people, you can do that.
Or go to a barbecue in Brazil.
Exactly. People can do this. I mean, it doesn't have to be just because it's a fight doesn't mean there has to be hatred or something. I mean, I guess the one thing I would guess put you at a disadvantage is one of you has to leave the camp, at least for the fight.
Didn't it happen with Rashad and? Somebody, I thought, or maybe it was
Jones, wasn't it? Wasn't Rashad?
Yeah, it was Rashad Jones and Rashad. Yeah.
So Rashad left to. Yeah, I think Sanchez did that too for a different fight as well.
It just makes more sense to me if you're dominating in your first couple of fights in the UFC, why go through that struggle? Now, granted, he's a wrestler; you can cut weight quite easily, but.
The one thing I would wonder though is if I'm Daniel Cormier and I'm Cain Velasquez's best friend and training partner, maybe I know I can't beat Cain Velasquez.
You think, maybe that's what it is.
So
maybe you have a damn good point there. But speaking of Cain Velasquez, and it's very funny on Wikipedia where I get the results. It says Junior Dos Santos defeated Junior Dos Santos by TKO. With a DDT, which isn't too far off.
It's not too far from the truth.
It came in the fifth round, 3:09 in. Basically, the finish came when... How would you describe it? Was it Junior Dos Santos was going for a takedown and...
I think Dos Santos was going for a head and arm choke, a standing head and arm choke. And he had it on. I think Cain just kind of scrambled out and kind of dragged. It just wanted to drag Dos Santos to the ground with him, and it just ended up spiking Dos Santos on his head. So it kind of looked like a weird DDT.
It was first saw it, I didn't see the spike. All I saw was him turtled up, and I'm like, "What's going on?" He just gave up. But of course, you see it again, and you're like, "Oh, well, that's what happened."
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. It was an interesting little play, but I mean, by that time, Dos Santos was so beat up and so exhausted,
You know what? He hasn't solved the Cain Velasquez puzzle. Is Junior Dos Santos the number two heavyweight in the world? Yes. But can he solve the Cain Velasquez puzzle? No. He just hasn't. He didn't do enough to change his game plan. It was just he was perfectly happy with Cain muscling him up against the cage for the duration of this fight.
You know, when he started out, he came out aggressive and tried to knock Cain's head off, and that was back exactly what I said he had to do last week, was get on Cain quickly, overwhelm him, and land the shot that he needed to hit. He didn't get it.
I think that befuddled him.
Yeah, well, he didn't have much of an answer after that. I'm not saying anybody has an answer for Cain Velasquez other than to, like I said, knock him out like JDS did in the first fight. But after three fights and after, 10 rounds or however many it's been, it's pretty apparent that Kane is a better fighter. It's pretty apparent that Kane is the baddest man on the planet. He's got cardio for days. He's strong. He can land heavy shots. But he is just relentless. He's going to pressure you up against the cage. He's going to pound you. He's going to bring you to the ground. He'll pound you some more. He can dictate the fight. And until someone has the wrestling ability and the cardio and the will to counteract that with Cain Velasquez, they're just going to have to rely on the striker's chance. And, these guys don't get knocked out that easily for the most part.
Oh, no, not at all. Cain Velasquez, he's made a believer out of me. It started really when I started changing my mind on Cain was when he TKO'd Bigfoot Silva. And from that time on, he's just looked so motivated, so destructive. You can't recognize what Junior Dos Santos looks like right now.
No,
he's a completely different person.
He was just horribly beat up. And this is another fight where we talk about fighter safety. Should that fight have gone on past the third round?
The third round, it was over.
It was over.
Dos Santos says he doesn't remember what he thought the fight ended in the second round. He doesn't remember 3, 4, or 5.
And so the debate begins. Why aren't people throwing in the towel? Why aren't refs stopping the fight? Herb Dean put his hand on Cain Velasquez in the third round, like he was going to stop the fight and thought better of it. And I was thinking, why didn't you stop it? Because it was clearly, I've seen Herb Dean stop it for less than that.
Yeah.
You know, I get it's a title fight. I get it's an important fight on the pay-per-view, but...
Well, because then we would have been here, oh, that was nonsense. He shouldn't have stopped it.
I doubt in this case we would have said that.
It's hard to say. I mean, would it have changed? Of course, we saw that it wouldn't have changed anything.
Yeah.
He got battered for another...
Yeah. Well, he was out. In that round, he was out on his feet. The only thing holding Junior Dos Santos up was the cage.
They almost broke the cage, too.
Yeah, they almost broke the cage as well. I mean, again, Junior Dos Santos is clearly the number two fighter at the heavyweight division. But Cain Velasquez is just some other world.
And... I mean, let's look at his last – since he lost the title. He's beat Bigfoot. He beat Dos Santos for the title at UFC 155. Beat Bigfoot again. And then beat Dos Santos again. Now they're going to throw Verdum at him. Verdum has no chance.
Verdum is a submission guy. He's a guy that tapped out Fedor. But for God's sakes, I mean, he hasn't fought anyone like Junior Dos Santos or Cain Velasquez. You know, he lost to Alistair Overeem. Good Lord. I mean, how far has Overeem fallen?
True.
He beat Fedor. Okay.
That was the first chink in the armor, though, when Verdum tapped out Fedor.
Yeah.
And he got caught, frankly. He got...
So his biggest win since then is Roy Nelson and Big Nog.
And Verdum did lose to, at UFC 90, Dos Santos.
Yeah. He did lose to Dos Santos. That's right. So, you know, he's on a resurgence. Don't get me wrong. For Fabricio, Verdum is a very good fighter.
He looked really good against Nelson, but what's that mean at this point?
Yeah. But that, and quite frankly, what does it mean in total? I mean, there is right now, quite frankly, Velasquez and Dos Santos are on an entirely new, different level than the rest of the heavyweight division.
And Cain on a different level than Dos Santos.
Yeah, I mean, if you even looking down the heavyweight division, you say, okay, if you look at the UFC rankings right now, number two is Daniel Cormier.
And he's gone.
He's going to light heavyweight. So throw him out. So then you got Fabricio Verdum, Bigfoot, who's lost to Cain twice, to Junior Dos Santos. Travis Brown is on somewhat of a tear. Josh Barnett is a veteran, but I'm not sure he's championship caliber at this time and place.
Yeah.
And then you're like, okay, Overeem, Mir, Miocic, maybe. He's in a couple fights. And then Roy Nelson.
Mir's a fight away from out of the UFC.
Yeah, quite frankly. I mean, quite frankly. The heavyweight division is quite thin right now.
Well, that's why I was saying earlier about Gonzaga.
Yeah, maybe. I'm with you. I get it. But I think I'm just wondering how Gonzaga will do against the upper echelon now.
So what's next for Dos Anjos? Who do you throw him in there to kill?
I think Dos Anjos is out for a while.
Well, 6 months from now, who do you think?
I mean, 6 months from now, I don't know. I that's a tough one. You know, I'm trying to think that if he's, I mean, maybe Barnett, maybe.
Just to see where Barnett is.
Yeah, just for name value too. I mean, you got, you know, Barnett is at least a name that you can talk about, and he hasn't fought him yet. So, but I mean, I don't know. I mean, the question I have with Junior Dos Santos is who do you put him up against that you don't want to lose? You know,
true.
You still have to find contenders for Cain Velasquez. So
you think Bigfoot then?
Maybe Bigfoot. I mean, Bigfoot makes at least a little bit of sense from, you know, protecting your fighters.
He killed Bigfoot.
I'm trying to think. Has Bigfoot fought JDS already?
I don't think so.
I don't think so. Okay. Well, maybe not. Let's pick someone who's on the way down. And Bigfoot seems to fit that bill right now.
Whatever happened to Shane Carwin? Completely off topic.
He retired.
Did he?
He did, yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay. Was it health-related or?
I think it was financial motivated. I think it was health-related too, though.
That's a shame. He was
He was an older fighter anyway. He was in his mid-30s.
Yeah, I know. So he was old when he got into it.
Yeah, so.
You talk about a guy who was devastating until he met Brock, you know. And even that fight, he was still devastating in that first round. Speaking about a fight that probably should have ended.
Yeah.
But he punched himself out. But to wrap this whole section up, I do have some highlights from the post-presser. So sit back, listen, and enjoy some highlights.
Fight of the night, if I need to say it, Melendez versus Sanchez might be the fight of the friggin'... The fight of the I don't know what. Knockout of the night was Dodson, and submission of the night was Ferguson. And because of their union representative, Tim Bosch, $60,000 bonuses tonight. The attendance tonight was 17,238 people. The gate was 2.5 million. And to give you an idea of how amazing Houston is and how good Houston has been to the UFC. I tweeted it earlier. You probably saw it, but I'll say it again. The number one grossing event of all time here at the Toyota Center was UFC 66. Number three was tonight, and number five was the other event here. I don't remember what number it was. So number one is the UFC. Number two is the Rolling Stones. Number three is the UFC. Number four is Madonna, and number five is the UFC.
Did you think that fight should have been stopped in the third when it looked like Dos Santos was clearly out on his feet? And did you feel Herb Dean tap you and possibly be in the process of stopping the fight?
I didn't feel it. No, I'm going to keep going until he just pulls me off. You know, I didn't feel him tap me or anything. So just keep going with what I was doing, and that's it.
Do you think it should have been stopped in the third?
Well, you didn't stop it, so I guess not.
Is this the most satisfying victory in your career so far?
Yeah, I'm definitely satisfied. You know, just hopefully no more excuses on his part. That's it, you know. We don't look for the finish. We just look to keep putting the pressure on, keep doing what we're doing, and if the finish happens, it happens. But we're not looking for it, you know.
And with going through this trilogy, will this help you be able to defend longer? Do you think you learned from going the first round what it takes to keep the belt for a long time and have a long reign like Anderson or John or somebody like that?
I think all the guys are tough, you know. Everybody's tough. On fight night, we have to show up. We have to show up and perform, and that's it, you know. and given any day, you could lose. So you have to go out there, just you know, try your best and perform.
Talk about your experience this evening.
It was good, man. You know, I thought I fought a good fight. You know, I was able to use my strategy that we went into the fight with and get a good win over a tough guy. And then to go back and corner Kane and be a part of him defending his championship against the toughest guy in the division was that was real special to me. It means a lot to me that he has the belief in me to think that I would be okay after my fight to go back and corner him right away. So it's confidence in what he feels that I see. And I also did my highlight at the Fox desk too. I called my own highlight. Yeah, that was cool. You like that, huh? Yeah.
Nice work. And you mentioned obviously that in your move to 205, I mean, a title shot is on your mind, but you know that there's probably going to be a step or two in between. Do you have an idea of whether it be a name or a level of opponent that, you know, where you think the right start would be in that division?
Well, I mean, you know, I'm 34 years old, man, so I have to get moving. Listen, I can ask. I mean, I wanted a Nintendo when I was growing up, and my mom just said no. So I can ask Dana for a title shot, and all he can say is no. And then maybe he just, like, gets tired of me asking and goes, okay, DC, now leave me alone. But I just want to fight when the division's moving. You know, before I was really kind of knocking, like, let me fight. And then the division moved on. No division waits for anyone but the champion. So it moved on. I just want to be in line when the rest of those guys are fighting, when Jones is fighting, when Gustafson's fighting. When the rest of those guys are fighting, I want to be fighting one of those guys.
He wasn't here, so I didn't say it before, but Harley Davidson was the sponsor of the main event, and Kane won another Harley Davidson.
Well, I want to say thank you to Harley. I want to say thank you to Dino. Been privileged to work with Harley for some stuff, and I love it. You know, I love riding. I love the company, so thank you. Oh, Daniel wants a three-wheel motorcycle, but I tell him if he gets that, he needs to ride in the back. You got to ride in the back, though. That's it.
Let me have this new one.
Yeah, sidecar for Daniel Cormier.
No, I want a three-wheel bike like he's bonded down. But he won't let me ride the front one. I made the name of the ride group. I named the ride group. Yes, I did. I named the group.
Can you tell us kind of what was going through your mind as the fight was going on? Did you have the feeling that you were involved in something special? And, you know, how did you, you know, stay out of the brawls? Obviously, he wants to brawl with you, and you were trying to keep it a little more technical.
Yeah, now it's a tough fight. It's kind of hard to, like, you know, put everything in perspective while you're fighting, you know. You know, I think I stood in there and banged it out with them as well, too, but I knew how to keep my feet moving. But, you know, that was it was a great fight. I knew I was ahead on the scorecards. Diego's a good fighter, you know, but I was happy with everything.
Getting into brawls like that, there's people saying, hey, how many more of these can this guy take?
Oh, no, I don't know. I was built for this fight and stuff, and I'm 31 years old, and I'm just feeling primed. I had a good time. I had fun out there with Gilbert. I've been waiting. Those are the type of fights that you wait for your whole career, because when you're an old man, you're gonna look back and you're like, yeah, that was fun, and I gave the fans an amazing, entertaining fight, and that's what I do it for. I fight for the fans and this sport, and I've been around this month. It'll be 9 years in UFC, and I just love this company. I love this organization, and every time I get to touch the canvas on my feet, I'm just very grateful. And you know, Gilbert, I take my hat off to Gilbert. I really, truly believe he's the number one lightweight in the world. I thought he was the uncrowned champ going into this fight. I thought he beat Benson Henderson. And, you know, he avenged his other two losses, too. So he's one of the best in the world. And, hey, Rocky didn't get the decision in the first fight. But, hey, you know what? He dropped him. And I dropped him, and I felt it was close to being a draw. I don't know. You know, I got some good takedowns, and the fight was close. They gave him the unanimous decision, but I thought the fight was closer. Thought it could have been a draw, and that's one of those fights that where you know you need five rounds for two warriors to really dig deep and go to the finish.
Coming out in your debut, I don't think people gave Sarah Coffin enough credit for what she's done. I mean, beating Misha Tate, Alexis Davis, Liz Carmouche. How big is this win for you to come out and beat a fighter like that in your debut?
Well, I think everybody gave her a ton of credit. I actually felt like I was the underdog coming in here, so I felt like everybody expected me to lose against her. So obviously a win against her, her being number two in the UFC right now, I mean, that's a huge win for me and a huge step for females who want to step up to 135 and, you know that's the only place for them to go. So it's a huge win, and it's a huge fight for the whole women's division in general.
All right, so that was highlights from the presser that took place immediately after. Of course, fight of the night was Melendez and Sanchez. So, there you go. UFC 166 is in the history books. This weekend, we have two events on a grander scale. The first one is UFC Fight Night, and that's headlined by Machida taking on Munoz, and Machida making his debut in the middleweight division.
Yeah, dropping down 185. I'm wondering how the weight cut's going to affect him. But if it doesn't affect him too much, you got to think a guy as fast as Machida was at 205 has got to be pretty fast at 185 as well. He as elusive as Machida is, any added speed is just going to make it that much more difficult for Mark Munoz to land his power shots. And he's much of a power fighter as he is. He's going to have a tough time actually landing something on someone like Machida. Machida's as elusive as they come. He fights with distance. He's a counter puncher. And he's probably going to be the bigger fighter here coming down from 185. So it's going to be I'm very interested in it because I want to see how Machida does at this weight class, because if he is as good as he was at 205, he's going to be a killer.
Yeah. It should be interesting to see how Munoz does against Machida, and it should be interesting to see how Machida does just in the new weight class. I'm going with Machida by decision.
Very good. I'll take Machida KO in the second.
Ooh. Ooh. We also, in the co-main event, we have Ross Pearson taking on Melvin Gillard. How do you see that one?
Gillard has a reputation as kind of a head case. He, even though he picked up a decent win versus Mac Danzig, he's had a very mixed career.
A thousand fights by now.
Yeah, I mean, he's...
What is he, 31-12? Yeah, 31-12-2.
Yeah, he's fought a lot of fights, but he's never seemed to get his act together for very long. I think he's in the midst of some personal troubles right now, changing camps, and you got to wonder if this is another case where he could come into a fight not completely focused. Ross Pearson is probably the less skilled opponent here when comparing him against Gillard, but Pearson is a solid fighter, usually comes in focus, comes to win.
He's in England.
He's going to have the crowd behind him. I just got to know. I don't know how Gillard's going to react. He has a tendency to wade in and just and jump in without thinking and get caught with stuff. And that's my kind of thought on the way this is going to go down. So I'm going to pick Pearson here by KO in the first round.
He is a finisher. He certainly is a finisher. Not only that, but the thing about Pearson, though, he does have a very up-and-down career. He went on a win streak for a while. Then when he lost to Cole Miller, it was he'd win one, lose one, win one, lose one. Now he's finally a winner of his last two. You're saying he's going to keep it up?
Against Melvin Gillard, I think so.
Oh, right.
In England, I think it's going to be.
Oh, and he did drop down to featherweight there for a little while.
For a little bit. Coming up back to lightweight to fight Gillard here. So.
Interesting. Should be interesting. No, he came up for Sotiropoulos and then Couture. Those are his two wins.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, he came up to fight Sith. Yeah, you're right.
But interesting fight. Should be explosive for as long as it lasts. I don't see it lasting too long, though. Just like you, I'm agreeing with you. First round TKO.
There you go.
We also have the first ever UFC women's bout to be held in Europe. And that's Rosie Sexton taking on, you say the last name?
Jessica Andrade.
There you go.
Andrade, I think it is.
He's the name guy on the show.
He is?
Yep.
I
definitely.
Tried.
You rock.
Thank you, Dan.
No problem.
I appreciate your support.
Thank you.
Rosie Sexton versus Jessica Andrade. Yeah, that's an interesting fight with lower level 135ers. Rosie Sexton is probably the veteran in this fight. Andrade's an undersized 135er. She usually fights at flyweight, so she's going to be kind of like her fight with Liz Carmouche. She's going to be undersized, probably going to have difficulty with Sexton's ability to push her around. Sexton is going to be the veteran here. I think she's going to take a decision win here.
All right. Now moving on also, and this one is going to be free on NBC Sports Net or whatever the hell they call it. It's there you go. It's going to be Berkman taking on Carl. That's the main event. World Series of Fighting, Omega. How do you feel about it?
Well, you got to think that this fight is another fight for Berkman to try to get a win, another win, coming off the impressive victory versus John Fitch. So, sorry, I got something in my ear here. It was me. I was trying to get the fight card up. Berkman's looking to get a win here, looking to keep the momentum going and set up a potential rematch with John Fitch, who's also on this card.
I was going to say that. That was my next point.
Yeah, so I think it's pretty much set up in this card that, you know, Berkman has a good chance of getting the win versus Carl, and then we'll get a good chance of getting of John Fitch winning his fight, hopefully. Now, he's got to stop losing this kid. He has not looked good lately. So we'll see how Fitch does. But if you see those guys get past it, I think you're going to see
a rematch
pretty easily.
And this would be a trilogy, right?
Yes, it would.
That's interesting.
Quite a long trilogy in the making because the first fight was several years ago.
Yeah.
So that'll be...
Still a trilogy in my book.
Yeah.
Anything else you see on this card?
Not really. I mean, there's some other UFC fighters on this card that we've seen before. Miguel Torres, of course, trying to get his career back on track after getting run out of the UFC. He's lost his last two. He did not have a good debut with World Series of Fighting against Marlon Moraes. He needs a win in very badly to keep his reputation. I mean, this is a former WEC champion. He had a huge winning streak for a long time. Beat some of the best in the division before running up against Brian Bowles and Joseph Benavidez, and then it just kind of fell apart from there. He needs a win pretty badly. I think this guy Pablo Alfonso is a type of guy he can get a win over, but you know. Who knows where Miguel's head is at this point.
Okay, so that takes place Saturday. I'm not sure what time it will be on, probably 9 o'clock.
I think it starts at 5 according to this.
Well, that's the prelims and everything.
The prelims anyway, but yeah, I imagine 8 o'clock or so for the
8 o'clock NBC Sportsnet. So check that out. We also have one other thing to talk about, and that is the new coaches for The Ultimate Fighter Brazil.
Oh, are these some calm individuals that would never think of, you know, talking crap?
Smack? No. Definitely it's going to be Vanderlei Silva and Chael Sonnen.
Those guys. They love each other.
That's interesting. The most interesting thing about it to me is how Sonnen's coaching staff is going to be Brazilian, I would imagine.
I'm not sure how that's going to work. I mean, well, how are they going to make that work? I think they were. I saw something today that said they might set it up as Brazil versus the USA.
Okay.
So that makes sense. But we'll see. That should be an interesting dynamic. We know Chael Sonnen can talk. We know Vanderlei can say something. Not exactly sure what it is. I'm hoping there's a translator, but
that's funny.
But we'll talk more about that in the coming weeks. Last thing I want to head off before we go into the sunset here with MMA news is Mike Pierce had some words for Husamar Paul Harris, and here they are. This is a courtesy of MMA Weekly on Axis TV.
And UFC welterweight Mike Pierce has his MRI results back after that controversial heel hook suffered at the hands of Husamar Paul Harris last week at UFC Fight Night 29. That's the one where Paul Harris got fired, thrown out of the UFC afterwards. Pierce has a sprained MCL and a badly torn ankle ligament, but the good news, if there can be in this situation, most likely he will not require surgery. He will be reevaluated in 2 to 3 weeks. And hopes to be in training. But Pierce did not mince words regarding Paul Harris.
the guy is an asshole, whether it's intentional or not. To be real honest, there's no excuse for it. You know, I mean, the guy is smart enough to get a black belt. He's smart enough to fight at a professional level. He should be smart enough to know when to let go.
Certainly the most succinct quote that we have had in ages on this show. Yeah, well said, Mike Pierce.
Yep.
So, Mike Pierce on Usamail Paul Harris, we covered it last week pretty much in detail. Smart enough to get a black belt, smart enough to know when to let go, right?
Man, he said it. Not much else to say about it.
Yeah, so where do you see Paul Harris coming from here? I know we kind of briefly touched on it last week, but what do you have to say?
I don't know. I mean, he's got to find some voice to fight. And that's who's going to take him at this point.
World Series of Fighting,
World
baby.
World Series of Fighting probably will be the guy where he ends up. I don't know. We'll see.
I know he's in a grappling tournament coming up. So
he's actually taking on Dean Lister in a grappling tournament. Which
he has to let go in a grappling tournament?
Yes, you do.
He should, yeah.
Yeah.
That's one of his incidents. It's the third time, so third strike he's out. One of the times, though, Dan, was he did it at one of the grappling – hurt the guy, too, like – ripped his knee out of socket or something.
Yeah. Jesus. Yeah, I see Saban. I see hiring him again. Why not?
I think Dean Lister's not going to take that, though, because Dean Lister's really good on the ground.
Well, fair enough. We do have our first guest and our only guest this week, as it turns out. It is Drew Blood. Now, Drew Blood, of course, returning to CZW earlier this year. And he came back. He apparently has a problem with Devin Moore. We're going to talk about their history a little bit. The history that he has with Devin Moore, this feud that he is in with Nation of Intoxication, and he'll be our guest right after this. Joining us now, it is the notorious one, Drew Blood. Drew, how are you doing tonight, sir?
I'm doing all right, guys. How are you guys doing? Still a little privileged. I'm the only guest on the show tonight.
Well, you know, I guess Ophidian, he had trouble. I don't know.
I guess he couldn't reach 88 miles per hour.
Possibly what it could have been. Now, Drew, you're involved in this huge thing. Let's go back in time, though. Devin Moore, yourself.
Trip back to memory lane.
Yeah. You guys kind of broke in together, or if not breaking in, you guys were involved in a tag team for a great number of years. Tell us a little bit about your history with Devin Moore.
Well, me and Devin started training. We did this one of my first interview, but we started tagging together and been pretty much a successful tag team on the East Coast for the better part of over a decade. And
jeez.
We had our fair little, had our fair share of battles throughout the years, but they were, you know, mutual battles, of course, competition, but, you know, I was just sitting on the shelf too long, you know, and I'm sitting back, you know, I don't get no phone calls from nobody, you know. You know, one day everybody goes out, hangs out once in a while. No, Nation of Intoxication, they're having a good old time. Where's my phone calls? Where's my invites to hang out with the boys? You know what I mean?
Oh,
you know, I felt like after my retirement match, you know, Devin was a little upset. You know, he's losing the tag partner, but it seems like I was really, you know, tossed to the side right after that. So it's a little personal. It's nothing. Like, this isn't business. because I'm going to do a business.
Well, let's go to that retirement match real quick. That was you and Devin Moore. I believe it was 3 years ago. He was the winner. And yeah, he was the winner. You were retired. You're on the shelf. Like you said, they're going out having a good time. It was actually Drake Younger that got you back into CZW?
Well, you know, I made quite a few phone calls to the nation, you know, throughout, you know, my tenure as a referee. I'm like, I'm getting tired of this referee thing, guys, you know. I was about pulling some strings talking to the boss because the boss doesn't listen to anybody that wears a referee shirt. Or, as a matter of fact, doesn't listen to anybody at all. So, look, you know, that's here and there. But, you know, they say, hey, no problem, and nothing was done. And I don't know what, you know, Drake said, but next thing you know, I got a phone call. You know, from Drake, you know, we got this thing going on. We got to take care of the nation, and you know Devin best. So I said, all right, I'm in. That's that.
No, all right.
I sat back and festered a little bit, and I was kind of pissed off. You know, Devin's been my best friend and hasn't been there.
Now, we go to Tangled Web. We go to Tangled Web. You teamed up that night with Roy Mondo, and you teamed up with Ron Mathis. You eventually left. What happened there?
You know, that little incident in the middle of the match where me and Devin saw eye to eye. That's all he wanted was a little taste. And, you know, he thinks he gets whatever he wants in CZW, you know, VP account relations, so to speak. Yeah, and I wasn't giving it to him. It wasn't happening. It's going to be on my terms. It was supposed to be on my terms. You know, my anger got the best of me, and I left my two guys that, you know, had my back that night. And I, you know, we smooth things out. So, but like I said, it's been personal with Devin, and it's been getting the better of my anger.
Do you think there's an advantage or disadvantage going into the ring against somebody you know so well?
Well, there is a disadvantage. He knows me as well as I know him. You know, I have to go into this thinking what he's. I have to go in there feeling it in Devin's mind, in my opinion. I have to think outside the box because, like, we know each other, like, we know ourselves. You know, it's a little difficult going in there knowing somebody that you've known throughout the years and knowing every aspect of what they do and what they can do. In extreme situations, you know?
What can you do?
It's going to be a difficult fight. It's going to be a difficult fight.
I was going to say, Drew, what can you do to prepare for somebody you know so well? I mean, do you even bother at that point?
Well, like I said, you always expect the unexpected, but I guess we're just going to have to go in there and find out who the best is in the Tour de Sink. Who really is Shawn Michaels? Who is really the Marty Jannetty?
That's good.
There's only one thing I like to say about that. You know, it's Marty Jannetty that I've never lost his smile.
No, that's true. Especially when he was jobbing on Nitro. Is this something are you going to try to really hurt him to drive the point home, or are you going to take it kind of easy? Like, how are you going to approach the situation?
Well, to be honest with you, it's the hardest match I've ever had to prepare for. I don't know, you guys recently heard the stipulations added by myself.
What were the stipulations?
Well, it's this match that, Devin, I kind of, fed into everything, making everybody believe that I was cowering away from him, but no, it was actually a setup.
Ooh.
I let Devin fall right into my trap.
Okay.
You know what I mean? The whole setup with Mathis, you know, with Lucky and all that, it was all preempted.
Okay.
I was hoping that was going to find those breast knuckles. I know he's seen them. So, it fell on the trap. So, on November 2nd, Night of Infamy, it's Ultraviolence comeback rules. My partners are going to be handcuffed to my post in my corner, as well as his partners. So, and then each corner was going to be a mystery box. And one of those mystery boxes are handcuffs. The keys to the handcuffs. Whoever reaches them first gets unlocks their tag partners and becomes a 3-on-1 handicap match throughout the rest of the match.
Ooh. Huh.
Now, I know Devin and Nation of Intoxication would love to get their hand on me, so there's no way they cannot not want to do this match. But in those three other boxes, you know, Souls of Violent Rules, God knows what's in there. There could be anything from anything to staple gun, thumbtacks, you name it. Whatever's in there.
Okay, so in this mystery box,
brutal fight.
Inside this mystery box, not only are the keys in there, but also various devices of torture.
Absolutely.
Wow.
This is just a typical wrestling match. This is a fight.
Now, obviously,
this is a fight that only like two scumbags would do. Therefore, me and Devin.
But can you trust your newfound partners, Rory Mondo, who seems to be on a quest for respect, not only from...
He's off his hinges, but I've gotten him to his head. You know, I've gotten him to see a clear picture in this. There is a goal that, you know, Rory will get, and there is a goal that Mathis will get. I promise them that. And that's how I'm solidifying him with trust. You know, I'm guaranteeing them guys what they want.
What is it what they want?
Well, Mathis just wants an opportunity, you know, and I've been giving him the opportunities.
Okay.
Rory just wants Danny Havoc. And I will give Rory Danny Havoc.
Okay. I have another question. Now, for those that watched the preview show for the last event, the name escapes me.
Barely there.
Well, it was Trima against Gacy. If you watch the whole the preview show for that, at the very end, Trima is cutting a promo. You're in the background lurking around. What's going on there?
You want to know what my suspicions were with Matt Trima at the end of the last pre-show?
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. What the hell's going on there?
Look.
I'm trying to get to the bottom of this.
I was just observing what's been going on with Matt lately. You know? The kid hasn't been getting the respect he has been getting recently. I have nothing planned out with Matt Tremont because, you know, of course, Matt doesn't like me as much as I like him, but I respect the kid. I just want to let him know that. That's all. You know, I see what he's been going through with Gacy. Seems like nobody's had his back. I'm not saying I have his back because he doesn't trust me at all. I know that because I have, you know, I tried to, and he just totally blows me off. But I just wanted to make sure that, you know, somebody, is acknowledging his accomplishments in CZW. Whether or not he wants to believe me, that's up to him. But it goes no further than that.
True, I have a question.
Trust me, there is nothing going on between me and Tremont. I really don't like the kid, but I respect the fact that he's willing to put his body online for anything.
I have a question about your health. I've seen you a couple of months before the CZW return. Are you finally back at what would be 100% at this point?
I've been 100% since Tangle Web.
All right. Worried about you sometimes, Drew.
I wouldn't be 100%. If I wasn't 100%, I wouldn't have agreed to come back to CZW.
All right. That was my follow up.
All right, I have another question. Talking about Tremont, I've seen you guys in other smaller promotions wrestle all throughout an arena. And then just this past month, earlier this month, I believe it was the 4th, you guys did battle again. So what is going on there? I'm trying to get to the bottom of this Tremont thing. It seems you're pretty interested in Tremont. You're wrestling him. You're trying to gain his respect. What's going on with Tremont?
Like I said, when it comes to terms of Tremont, that's business. You know, this is a competitive business. You know, he's a key player, and it seems like he's been worried about, you know, the respect he's not to get. So,
okay,
when it comes
down
to wrestling, you want to showcase what you have and make, you know, prove that you're a key player in this competitive sport. So why not see what I just wanted to see what the kid had, you know?
I got you. Well, what were your matches like?
To me, with him.
Well, what were your matches like with Tremont? Are those matches you look back on and go, they were great? Or how do you feel about the series of matches you've had with him
well,
so far?
Well, when it comes in terms of Tremont, I'm obviously 0-2 against the guy, so he's gotten the better of me. So, you know, but he has a different aspect to it. On October 4th, I wasn't really focused on Tremont, but I was just looking for a fight. I was trying to push that kid to his limits, you know, and he proved to me that he could go to the full potential. But that's what I was trying to prove to him, you know. I wanted to prove to him that somebody was actually acknowledging the fact that he could go.
I got you. Now, moving on to On Point Wrestling, of course, the last show, unfortunately, the highly entertaining wrestlers lost. But as a result of that loss, now you have to look forward to the returning team, as well as the Assyrian Portal. I mean,
I have my history of both teams there.
Yeah, the best around.
I have my history of best around with Teddy Fine. You know, best around are very high, very good competitors when it comes to tag team wrestling. Probably one of the best tag teams that I wrestled against. So it's going to be a good competition. I mean, don't let it sidetrack me one bit against Pinky Sanchez, you know. He stole my mind for All Point Wrestling. I'm not done with Pinky by a long shot. But if there's going to be a little curveball thrown in there, bring the curveball. You know, I have confidence in highly entertaining wrestlers. I have confidence in my tag team partner, Xavier Cross. And I think we'll fare well with the best around and the Osirian Portal.
Now, what's it like teaming with a younger guy like Xavier Cross? Is that a learning experience for both of you guys, or is that...
Well, absolutely. It's somebody that I can mentor a little bit, but he's far surpassed any mentor. He's like a sponge, man. He's quick to learn things, and he's quick to, absorb and get comfortable with his new surroundings. He's not naive when it comes to younger talent, in my opinion. He's one of the more advanced guys that I've teamed with, you know, to get accommodated with a new tag team partner, if you will, so to speak. So, Xavier Cross has nothing but a bright future in this business.
How do you go out there and compete on a stage level with the likes of a guy like Loudy and Xavier? How do you compete with those guys?
How do I compete with those guys?
Yeah, I mean, they are fabulous.
It's a weird mixture. It's like, I don't know, it's like one of those highly dangerous or hazardous chemical toxins that, you know, if you leave it alone, it doesn't bother nobody. But if you disrupt the chemical compounds, it could be highly dangerous. Their spiel where it seems like, you know, they're a little rambunctious at times, if not all the time. That's not my quarrel, and that's not my style. But what I bring to the table is, it mixes well with the psychological aspect that they bring and the methodical aspect that I bring.
Some of the most entertaining things I've seen in tag team wrestling is your entrance with them and just you as a team. You guys are one of my favorite tag teams in wrestling. I always wondered what it was like trying to one-up each other.
There is no one-up, and it's all about teamwork.
Yeah.
It's all about entertainment and psychological disadvantages to the other teams.
It's beautiful. It's awesome.
Well, what does Loudy bring to the package? You know, we're talking about Cross and yourself. What does Loudy bring to that?
What does Loudy bring
to
the
Well, the highly entertaining package.
He brings the money, man.
Yeah, I know what he brings, but what for the people?
He brings the money and that fabulous sign.
Yes. Loudy does.
Loudy's the hidden weapon of highly entertaining. He's a scout. You know what I mean? Of course, you know, look at the new additive to On Point Wrestling's highly entertaining version, Stan the Man Styles.
That's true.
How can you compete with a guy named Stan, with a guy like Stan Styles? Like, who would want, like, you're standing across from this guy. Who would be creeped out by that? I know I'm creeped out by tag with him, but I love it because he's on my team.
That is quite true. He had the shake weight and just a lot of A lot of innuendo went into that.
Are you guys going
You're
going
to ask me to explain Stan Styles, and I'll tell you what, I cannot explain that guy, so I just let it be.
Try
it just
not
works
to.
Well.
Yeah, don't bother.
If you ask me, that's entertainment.
It's definitely entertaining. You guys looking to expand on purpose, or is it something that just happened with him?
No, Stan Styles was a pack. You know, it was part of the package that he took some time off as well. And I said, well, if anybody would be fulfilling the void in the if there was a void in high entertainment, it'd definitely be Stan Styles.
I can agree with
that.
Now,
if there was a leak, he'd be the patch that would fix it.
Now, On Point Wrestling, let's take a look at that last event. Just as someone watching the show, after your match was done or before the match, before your match, just watching that show, what did On Point bring to the table at All or Nothing?
That show was, without a doubt, the best show that On Point has so far. And that just keeps proving to me, and it should be proving to everybody else, that We're first face on the scene, and if you ask me, we're going to be a little bit dangerous in the near future. So it's going to expand. It's going to blow up, in my opinion. They delivered last show, big time. I see nothing but a bright future for that company.
What are your thoughts on that main event? Everybody's talking about it. Scott Summers, Chris Dickinson. Just your personal thoughts on that main event.
Two tough son of a bitches, man. That was a fight, if you ask me. Like, you know, it wasn't like, you know, what everybody thought it was going to be. It was going to be this all-out brawl. No, they showcased what they can do in the ring as well for both their street fighting aspects to this. You know, it was a hell of a fight. I'll tell you what, they were tough.
You know, yes, definitely.
Masada was very impressed with the contest between the both of them.
Yeah, that's true. Masada was there. He's quite friendly with Scott Summers, it seems. Anyway, Drew, what are your final words going into Night of Infamy as you are finally across the ring from Devin Moore?
This is a personal matter between me and Devin. But in my opinion, it's probably going to be the fight of the century between me and him. And if I wouldn't miss it if I was a fan of CZW, you know, because if you ask me, me and Devin are the one of the only originals left, one of the only two originals left from the Ultraviolent Hour from back in the ECW arena.
Wow.
So we know what it takes to be in CZW and what it is to earn the CZW colors in our blood. So if you want to take a step back to the old ECW days, you won't want to miss the main event between me and Devin. Ultraviolence Comeback Rules of our second night event.
That's right. That's, of course, Voorhees, New Jersey at the Flyer Skate Zone. Don't miss that. Drew, it's always a pleasure when we have you on. Do you have anything else for us?
No, other than that, just make sure you come out and see Night of Infamy and, you know, keep listening to Hell in a Cell Radio every Wednesday night, you know?
That's
you guys are
right.
Running with guests, man. I never do anything with it. I'm always bored. These guys want more bullshit and have me be real people. That's even better.
Maybe you'll be on the next round table. You never know. That's where we get around and we talk about, what's going on in wrestling. I'm thinking maybe you and MLJ. That's what I'm thinking. Oh. I'm thinking it right now out loud.
Sounds good.
All right.
I'd like to see that.
All right, Drew, thank you for your time, and definitely check out Night of Infamy. It's available on iPay-Per-View as well, as long as the stream works. But, Drew, you have a good night.
You too, Alberto. You too, there.
I really don't want to get into a fist fight with you.
I'm not getting into a fist fight. I'll definitely be at Cage of Death. I'm not sure about Night of Infamy. Well,
you better order on iPay-Per-View, goddammit.
Oh, you know me.
Every single one of them.
Yeah, this one I have on the house anyway because of the streaming problems last time, Drew. So.
Yeah, I'll be there.
I'll definitely talk to you pretty soon. And
it's going to be a fight where neither guy's going to walk out the same person after this fight.
I can believe that. I can believe that. Just the description of the match itself.
Just put that in your head and figure out how brutal it's going to be.
Yeah, definitely. And you got two guys backing you up there that really want blood as well.
He got two guys backing him up that ain't too soft either. You know what I mean? They ain't right in the head.
Well, true.
Just like that Alpha Predator.
Yeah, true. But we'll talk
it's
soon.
A time bomb, I can't.
So that was Drew Blood. Make sure you check out Night of Infamy either on iPay-Per-View or go down to the Flyer Skate Zone in Voorhees, New Jersey. And guys, we have another pay-per-view to talk about.
Yes.
It's Hell in a Cell.
Oh, we're having a pay-per-view?
I wish. 2013.
Ian Dan in a Loser Leaves Town match?
Oh, stop it, you two. Just stop it.
Bastard.
Now, the kickoff match we kind of touched on, it's Curtis Axel with Paul Heyman taking on Big E Langston. That's for the Intercontinental title. How do you guys feel
about
it?
Bathroom break.
Well, it's not even part of the pay-per-view. It's the YouTube, so I guess you just wouldn't be watching YouTube.
I guess I won't be watching it.
Fair enough.
Big E, why not?
You're going with Big E?
Big E.
I'm going with Big E, too. The hell with it.
I'm going with the Schmoz or whatever.
Oh, fair enough. That's actually probably what's going to happen. But I'm still going with Big E.
I am a professional.
Alberto Del Rio taking on John Cena. That is for the World Heavyweight Championship. Welcome back, John Cena.
I guess.
Welcome back. Yeah.
Welcome back.
Who do you see winning?
Superman.
Unfortunately, yeah, Superman.
Super Cena for the win. Okay.
Yeah.
Boy, let's switch over to Goldust and Cody Rhodes. We'll be taking on The Shield and The Usos. Interesting. That's a triple threat tag team match for the WWE Tag Team Championship. Of course, Goldust and Cody are the tag team champions.
I think this is going to be a really good match, honestly. And so I'm going to pick the Rhodes, holding on to their titles.
I'm
going to actually go the other way, and I think that they're going to lose on the pay-per-view. It's going to go back and forth.
So you think it's just going to be that hot shot type of booking going on?
Yeah, I do.
Back and forth.
I believe I do, yeah.
I'm going with Goldust and Cody for the win.
Let me be clear. I don't want that to go that way. But
you just think that that's how it's going to – I understand. You're trying to give a prediction to the best of your ability what you think WWE booking would do.
Yes, sir.
I understand that.
Thank you.
AJ Lee is defending her title against Brie Bella, and unfortunately I think Brie Bella will pick up the win.
Yeah, unfortunately I agree.
I'm going to make it 3.
Ugh, God. I'm so depressed just reading this. Randy Orton taking on Daniel Bryan. This is, of course, for the still vacant WWE Championship. It will be held inside a Hell in a Cell. And, of course, Shawn Michaels is your special guest referee. Omega.
I'm going to go with Randy.
Oof. So depressed.
That's probably how I was going to go, though, I think.
I want to go with Brian, but I think it's going to go with Randy.
Let's make it three. It's a unanimous decision. Randy Orton for the title.
At least I feel better than I think, as I'm not the only one.
And
it's depressing, isn't it?
We have a we'll get into that when we get done this. We have a handicapped Hell in a Cell match. We talked about it earlier. It's CM Punk taking on Ryback and Paul Heyman.
Yippity-doo. Why do I have a feeling that I have a feeling somehow Punk's getting screwed.
I'm going to think Punk's going to win so we can finally end this.
You think it's time to end it?
I hope so.
Oh, no, I think it's time to end it, but whether they will or not, I doubt it.
Let's go with a CM Punk. So we had the split decision on this one. Split decision. I don't know. Speaking about how depressing it is, I think the fact that they had such a bad pay-per-view only 3 weeks ago, of course, that was Battleground, which was pretty poor.
When you start naming things randomly, it's time to cut a pay-per-view. Yeah.
The Battleground was, on paper, it should have been a much better show. Unfortunately, how it delivered and how they left people with such a bad taste with the non-finish, of course, between Brian and Orton, with the Big Show getting involved. There was just so much going on. It's like you throw things against the wall and they just... I don't know. They're trying to find something. Omega, your thoughts on this, and Dan, yours as well.
Yeah, I don't know. I think I don't know. I mean, I think just too many pay-per-views. I don't think the product's been very compelling in the last several months, and you know, I wouldn't be surprised if this pay-per-view is just horrid in terms of buy rate.
Not only that, and Dan, I'll give you a chance in a second, but not only that, I just think that since SummerSlam, something happened. Actually, Money in the Bank. I think Money in the Bank was the last good pay-per-view.
After Michael P.S. Hayes got suspended, the guy who would open his mouth and go, "I don't like that idea," is gone.
Yeah, that could be it.
I really think that's it. After putting it all together, it was like an epiphany. Michael Hayes is gone. The one that says, you know, that idea sucks, Vince. I think you should do it this way.
That's a hell of a theory, Dan. I think you're onto something.
And ever since then, it's like, okay, whatever you want. That sounds good, like that. And I think they're booking themselves into a hole.
Yeah, boss. Yeah, that sounds good. Make a title.
I like that. John Cena for the 400th title shot. Show me that one.
Triple threat.
Wait, buy rights are down. Did you say buy rights? Where's Cena? Is his elbow okay? Oh, it's disattached? Who cares?
That's okay. Put a stitch on there, and we'll do it that way.
That's right.
I really think they're scrambling, and they don't know what to do.
Oh, shit. Rob Van Dam's gone. What are we going to do?
Wow, he was only here a month and a half. He'll be back in a month and a half.
Where's Brock Lesnar? Give him a call.
it's really it's funny, but it's not funny.
Is Undertaker ready? No, damn, it's not WrestleMania.
We need six more months for Undertaker. His mohawk hasn't filled in yet.
Where's Kane? What? With the Wyatts? What happened there?
He's filming another movie.
Scrap that. Anyway.
Give me Hogan.
What about Vader? He's too Vader versus Goldust for the title.
Do it.
1993. Let's do it.
I do it.
Oh, my God.
Is Mick Foley still on tour?
I think you're
onto something. Get back to the point.
I really think it's about it's the sycophantic, what we got to impress Vince.
Dan, what did you just say?
Sycophantic?
Dan, I'm so... Dan, you have no idea. You just made me such a proud papa right
Thank
here.
You. I used a big word, Dad.
Oh, Dan.
No, I was really thinking about that the other day because I was reading that article. And it's like, who else back there has enough seniority to go, you know, Vince, I think that's terrible.
It very well could be. I think you really could be onto something because he was what? In charge of I know Stephanie's in charge of creative period, but he was in charge of SmackDown.
He was in charge of SmackDown and he would decide where the stories would go that night.
Hmm. Who's in charge of it now? Does anybody know?
They named it, and I forgot.
Is it somebody that's known in the business, or was it?
But I totally blanked. I didn't
care. The guy who got fired from...
I didn't care that much. That's how much this name meant to me. Okay. Give me... Omega, what do you think? And give me some time to look this up.
I would just... I kind of think that's... You're on to something, like Dean says. I mean, but that's been a problem for years. It's like nobody wants to say no to Vince, and Vince is, whatever, 70 years old or whatever he is, and... He's just recycling ideas and recycling guys that have been around for so long and just can't seem to find something to do with their up and coming guys, the younger guys, the Daniel Bryans of the world, they just flounder. I think you got a point. Perhaps it's just because people won't say no or
keep going.
Maybe Sammy Callahan is the guy to save everything. With his Xbox.
Solomon Grundy, born on a Monday, died on a Sunday?
Solomon Crow, Dan.
Oh.
Solomon right. Crow.
My bad.
The crows are circling.
They didn't name it. My point is you hear why he was suspended. Heroes, have a drink.
Hey, sometimes, maybe he was testing her. This was part of...
Indeed, I thought that for about a second. I was like, no.
No, it's just Michael Hayes.
It's just Michael Hayes. He isn't no good touch, bad touch.
He really doesn't.
I've redeemed myself, have I?
You have, Dan.
Thank you.
You used a big word and got a giggle out of me.
I don't know how to control my voice or when to shut up. Oh, I'm fired?
Oh, suspended.
You can't fire me, I quit.
No, I think he's still around. Freebirds, Bad Street USA. That's what I got to say about that. So, pay-per-view, if you feel like torturing yourself.
Hey, Michael, how come you don't go to work no more?
I'm just looking at this card, and it's like...
I have no interest whatsoever to read up or buy or give a crap.
Well, I'm going to watch it, but just so I can talk about it. It's not like... Not like this is my job, per se, but I think I should at least see it for that. You know what I mean? So I can say that, yeah, it sucked. I don't know.
This is one of those pay-per-views to me that reads, all you need to do is read the results, and you'll know how much it sucked.
I don't know, man. It's one of those things. Maybe it's going to be amazing. Maybe the Hell in a Cell with Bryan and Orton will deliver. With Shawn Michaels being the wild card in it, I don't know. Maybe the Shield match will be great. I don't know. Where's Moxley in all of this?
I don't think that the Shield will have a bad match at all. But I do think, partly back to what I was saying about the booking into a corner, that's why I believe it's going to be Hotshot. They're going to jump right back.
Give it right back to him. Just
and it, not that they're going to keep it, but I think there's going to be a chase, win, chase, chase, that kind of thing.
No, I get you. Yeah, it makes sense. It makes sense. Omega, your overall thoughts on this pay-per-view?
You know, this pay-per-view, I guess, it leads me to one question. Is it time for the Rumble yet?
Yeah, I think that... What's going on with Survivor Series? Are they just pushing this off until they do a tournament for Survivor Series for the vacant title?
I don't know. I mean, Survivor Series hasn't been good for several years.
True.
So it's like, I don't even know. It's like I usually look for the Rumble, and that's about it. You know?
I really think I'm going to stick to this until it eventually happens in 20 years. It should roll back down to the main... I think that would help them monetarily. And storyline-wise. Stretch it out. Cut Raw back to an hour and a half, 2 hours. Go to WrestleMania... what we got? Royal Rumble, WrestleMania, SummerSlam, Survivor Series. Put King of the Ring at the end of the year for the title?
Well, not for the title, just...
For the title shot, I mean.
Oh, well... Was it a title shot?
I believe it was. Didn't
No, you were just kind of King of the Ring. Of the Ring. No, the Royal Rumble was always the title shot.
Well, put it at the end of the year, because you have to have something to cap off the year.
Well, King of the Ring was June.
That's what I'm saying. Series. Move it.
Nah.
You hold Survivor just, Series as a cap-off?
Yeah, do it how it used to be done. That's how... If they went back to the original idea... I mean, it was exciting watching the Survivor Series as a kid, and you would see the Ultimate Maniacs. Why were they together? It didn't make sense, but it was amazing.
Who cares? It was fun.
Yeah.
You saw The Undertaker make his first appearance ever.
That's true.
You know, things like that, not just, you know, Battleground was last month.
Yeah, I mean, you had more time to build up. You had more time. How did they even build up Hell in a Cell? And this is Hell in a Cell. This is a huge event. Not the pay-per-view, but I'm talking about Hell in a Cell matches. Or at least they used to be.
No, they were. I think
they lost a lot of ground, and I'll let you get your words out, but they lost a lot of ground with Hell in a Cell matches when it was a Big Show and Vince and Shane against DX.
But if Paul Heyman is in your Hell in a Cell match,
exactly.
it's overexposed. I'm sorry.
Exactly.
It was a bad idea to put a pay-per-view based around a cage match, period. Period. As big as it is, you cannot... There's no point in calling this a Hell in a Cell. If every match needs to be a Hell in a Cell match.
Well, I wouldn't go that far either.
Then there's no point. Then the main event's just Hell in a Cell called something else. You get what I'm... You know what I'm getting at. It's just another pay-per-view. They called it Hell in a Cell.
Well, sure. But they got it for the fans that remember Mick Foley falling off a cage, it's for those fans to go, Hell in a Cell, huh? Pay-per-view.
Is it just the quality of the match in the Hell in a Cell?
Well, here's the thing. I mean,
well, what do you?
They're still at PG-13. They're not going to do what they did with Michaels and Taker and have all that blood, or at the very least have a wrestler fall 50 feet to a table.
Not I agree with that.
But whatever, you know what I mean.
No, I agree with you. What were you saying, Omega?
Well, I'm just wondering if it's like, I mean, the matches in the Hell in a Cell are what? They got, you know, CM Punk versus Ryback and Paul Heyman.
Yeah,
Orton
and Bryan.
And Orton and Bryan. And that's not, nobody cares about Orton. Bryan, okay. But Bryan against somebody else might be good.
Yeah, I was going to say, Bryan is not the problem in that match.
I just don't think there's any excitement for the match.
It's shitty booking. Sorry, I didn't mean to say that. It's crappy booking.
Yeah.
That's it. Like, I don't – oh, my God. I don't care about Randy Orton so much. I don't even have an analogy, man. It's that bad. But, yeah, let's book him in a match with Daniel Bryan. Daniel Bryan could have a good match with mostly anybody in the company. Why waste our time with somebody who's going to put me to sleep?
I don't get the put. What is so bad about Orton?
He's boring.
In the ring.
He's boring.
Well, you're just saying he's boring. Give
overall
me an example.
Boring. I'm not impressed by his entrance. I'm not impressed by his speaking skills.
I'm talking about wrestling.
And I'm not impressed by his wrestling. It's just another match to me.
He's a very crisp wrestler. I'm not sure. I just don't know where it comes
from. I'm just not seeing it, man. I don't know. It's just how I feel.
Best power slam in the business, my friend.
Oh, you know. I thought that was a dead
guy. Like his power slam. I'll give you that.
I'll give you a power slam.
Yeah, best
British Bulldog had a better power slam.
Well, that was a different type of power slam. I'm talking about the snap power slam off the ropes. Not the Oklahoma slam.
He has a great DDT.
That's overexposed. I mean, that should have came out kind of like the punt, but whatever.
Right, the punt. I'm going to turn around and punch the ring. Okay.
Yeah, he doesn't do that anymore. But whatever the case is, you're not alone in that thinking, so, you know, whatever.
Oh, every time, listen, it's funny. Every time we're watching Raw, Kelly will get up out of her chair purposely, just so the world, whoever's watching, NSA, government, just so they know she's mad that he's on TV.
Really? That's bizarre to me. But that's true. I did the same thing with Goldberg, so I don't know.
Well, I agree with you, Goldberg.
I stopped watching when he was champion of Raw or world champ. I didn't watch.
How the hell do you think I lasted with him with Nitro? He was the world champion. He beat Hulk Hogan.
That's when I tuned out, friend.
In front of 63,000 people on Nitro for free. For free.
Yeah.
Ugh. Idiots.
Free?
No, my point is, jackass, my point is...
It's late. I'm sorry.
I know. I guess I deserved it, I guess. No, my point is whatever we're saying about Goldberg, that was the highest attended Nitro. They announced it a week and a half before. 63,000 people, and they gave away the match for free.
Yeah.
And it was, I think there was 11 moves in 20 minutes.
It wasn't a 20-minute match. Let's be realistic. It was about an 8-minute match. Goldberg went over with his finisher, and it ushered in...
You forget Carl Malone and DDP came out.
Oh, yeah.
Don't forget about that now.
Terrible time. Terrible time to be a fan.
In trucks.
Terrible. Terrible. But enough of that.
This is what I'd like to keep going on. This is where I get the best. Just tearing it apart. Go ahead.
I'm done for the week, Dan. Omega.
Like, yeah, you put that D. Well, I'm done.
Yeah, Omega. Oh, wait, next. I'll get into it in a second. Omega, where can the fine people find you?
Follow me on Twitter, at Omega Squad.
Dan?
Follow me at DanLaw83, and Monday nights at 9 on the Hell in a Cell Radio Network, Obey the Puck. Follow us at Obey Puck Show.
And, of course, you can listen back to a fabulous interview with Paul Baker from StadiumJourney.com. For all your stadium needs.
Now, I'm so glad you're here. I have a... keep going.
No, go ahead, Dan.
No. Keep going on that one. I'll tell you off here.
Oh, well, very well.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry. Next week we have Craven Vero making his return. It's been a while since we've had him on. I believe it's his first appearance this year on the show. And looking forward to seeing what's going on. He is, of course, the PWS Suicidal... six-way champion. That's going to be fun. We're also going to be joined by Tony Gibbons. Tony Gibbons is the promoter for NWA Smoky Mountain, and he's also the man behind the Facebook page, the wildly popular Facebook page, You Are Not Getting Booked. We're going to talk to him about his Facebook page, about Smoky Mountain Wrestling. That's down there in, goodness, where is it? I think Tennessee. I could be wrong.
It's way down there, yeah.
I haven't done my research as far as Smoky Mountain yet. I will be as the time goes on. I am, of course, the Dean of Credibility, Double D. Oh, this Friday. I almost forgot about that. This Friday is the debut of the ill-fated HIAC After Midnight. It will be hosted by myself and... MLJ.
Ill-fated. I don't know why you were going that way.
Ill-fated, my friend. I already feel it in my bones. But we will be joined for the first ill-fated episode by the Mystery Men. El Diablo will be joining us. We kick off this show at midnight on Friday. I make it easier. I say 11:59 p.m. Friday night will be HIAC after Midnight, MLJ and myself. Hopefully Mark Go Thompson will be joining as well, but he's about as easy to track down these days as Ophidian.
I'm your huckleberry.
I know, Dan. Perhaps for the second episode if I don't hear back from him.
I'm always here. Just give me a call, okay?
I will stop it.
It's Kingsport, Tennessee, by the way.
Kingsport, thank you, Dan, for checking that out.
No problem.
Now, you can also check out the blog. Justin Clayton of Moose Knuckle Radio has written his first expose into the life of a gamer. It's his introductory piece as a writer for HIACtalkradio.com. Check it out when you have a chance. Also, you can follow us on Twitter. That's HIAC Talk Radio.
Like the Facebook, that's HIAC Talk Radio. We're also available on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. So if you have a phone, a smartphone, the app is great on it. Trust me. You can listen to some past episodes. I believe they have the last 10 episodes, and that would include all of the network.
It is built for the mobile, that app.
It really is.
It is built well for it.
Oh, it really is. So check that out as well. And I do want to make note on a serious note. 4 years ago, my mom passed away.
Oh, Jesus.
And
4 years ago?
Yeah. Yeah.
My God.
Yeah, 4 years ago. And on that note, rather than having Nine Inch Nails or something like that play, I decided to play, pick out one song that meant a lot to her and one that means a lot to me. So until Monday night, well, Friday, when we're after midnight.
After midnight.
Yeah, we're going to have that, and we'll see you Friday night, and Dan returns on Monday with Obey the Puck, and it's a full week starting on Friday. We're going to have After Midnight, Obey the Puck, Moose Knuckle Radio, and, of course, the flagship HIAC Talk Radio.
The Enterprise, if you will.
Yeah, so on that note, it's been 4 years, but I still miss her, and I love her, so...
from the storm until our time arrives.